They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights.
On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew.
Joining us on the Commons today is John Sellers. John's sort of taken Arizona by storm and taken on the entire country by storm, actually. John's a retired... he's making waves, and I like people who make waves because we just can't get too complacent. John's a retired banker, so he understands everything there is about banking and money, and that's what he's going to talk to us about today. John, thank you so very much. I know you're sitting in your car. I know you're sitting outside the courtroom in Arizona, and you're taking time out to talk to us. And for that, I really am grateful.
Oh, my pleasure.
So tell us what is going on. What's happening?
Well,
explain banking to us. Why should we care about it?
Well, it's all about the money. And unlike the situation we had in 2007, 2008, which I think baffled most people at its origin because it was all about exotic financial instruments that few on Wall Street even understood, the issues that we're uncovering here, with one exception, which requires a knowledge of bankruptcy law, are actually very, very simple, basic banking tenets that when you sit down and explain to people, you know, what is involved, they get it very, very quickly. It's not that complicated. The real question is waking people up to the reality of what's going on with the money. And, you know, I think we spoke on your show maybe 3 or 4 months ago, which seems like an eternity.
It's been a while, hasn't it? It was fun.
Well, I think we'd done enough onion peeling with the money side of things, particularly around the failure, in my view, to respect both the principles and the letter of the law with regards to the Patriot Act. But as the onion peeling continues, just by following, you know, simple money trails, and sometimes they're very small amounts of money, but they can be very telling, you know, we find that the degree of concern you know, gets bigger and bigger. And what's kind of interesting is to see the reaction of some of the major players involved, particularly some of the larger management companies, and in particular First Service, which is a $1.4 billion market capitalization public company that's quoted on the NASDAQ and the Toronto Stock Exchange. And to see how the ferreting, which is not just me, by the way. One of the sad things that we had is that we've had a group that's grown and grown and grown here, which was previously a lot of individuals, you know, fighting for their rights by themselves. But
yeah,
thanks to the blog and the activities of some people, we've come together and coalesced as a group. So we have quite a lot of people out there ferreting after some very basic stuff in subdivisions, asking questions of, you know, where are the signing authorities on the bank accounts, and, you know, how does the money actually move, and, you know, where is our money kept? And the revelations are, you know, quite remarkable in my view. And I think the powers that be that are running these pools of money are realizing that, you know, there's some questions, serious questions that need answering.
You know, it's funny when agents or people buy a house, a condominium, and in an HOA, they think they're buying carefree living. They don't have to worry about a thing. Everything is taken care of for them. Unfortunately, a lot more is taken care of them care of for them than they realize. And having to know about banking and having to understand the money situation is vital. And so we don't spend enough time understanding what's happening and how it affects us. So I'm so glad you're doing what you're doing.
Well, I think that applies to all levels of government, actually. I mean, the way I look at homeowners associations is they're at the bottom of four levels of government. You've got federal, which people like to complain about. You've got state government, and then you've got municipal government. And the fourth level of government, which is right on your doorstep in the homeowners association, is largely overlooked. And, you know, my feeling is that it's very easy for people to complain about draining the swamps in Washington because it's a long way away, but there are plenty of swamps in homeowners associations and other levels of government.
Oh, yeah.
But it's more painful on a personal basis for people to get involved. But one of the things I want to emphasize as far as the money is concerned is that even by CAI's numbers, there's an annual $75 billion of monies flowing into homeowners associations and $50 billion of reserves. I really believe that a lot of the horror stories that we hear, which are extremely painful on an interpersonal basis, are really driven by the fact that the game plan and the business plan of the homeowners industry is driven by the notion that we got to keep this little dirty secret that we have these vast pools of cash. And so even the simplest efforts at transparency, it's in their interest to cover it up because when people start looking, they start to realize something's afoot. I'll give you an example. I presented a decent sized letter raising my major areas of concern to the Arizona Bankers Association about 10 days ago, in the knowledge that the Arizona Bankers Association comprises a lot of different stars and types of banks, some good, some bad. And I got a phone call. I won't mention the name, but I got a phone call from a guy who used to be the chairman or the president of the Arizona Bankers Association, but not a terribly well-known bank, but obviously a good one. And he was explaining how what I'd put down to him was concerning. And then he further went on to say, and bear in mind, this is a seasoned banker, that he'd just gone on the board of his homeowners association in Scottsdale, and his wife had become the treasurer. And the first thing they uncovered was that the homeowners association, through the management company, had well over $1 million sitting in one bank account with one bank. And he said, wow. Even I hadn't realized that. He said, of course, the first thing we did was, we laddered the CDs, as it's called. You take them and you break them up and put them into chunks of $250,000. And the management company almost refused to follow instructions to allow that to happen. It was as if they considered the money to be their own. And that pattern is repeated. We have just filed, my wife and I, or rather myself, two petitions with the regulators here. One of them is against the one of the homeowners associations that we own in, where my wife is on the board. And the management company, First Service, is refusing steadfastly to answer some very, very basic questions and give up some very simple basic banking records, despite the fact that they've been ordered to by the board. They're refusing to give those records up.
That happens. You know, unfortunately, I've heard that before. It happens all the time.
Well, one of the things, and this is I mean, just to sort of give you a snapshot of what I consider the financial issues to be, the first one is making politicians here aware that there was $1 billion, and we discussed this last on the call, $1 billion was lost because of the round tripping and the shenanigans that took place within certain banks in Arizona. And that was monies that had to be injected by the FDIC. The next issue, and these are potential risks rather than things that have happened in the past, is the absolute failure to, I believe, respect the provisions of the Patriot Act. The second current issue is the absolutely loose practices with regards to the direct debit ACH authorities that have been given to management companies who aren't banks. And then the other issue, the third issue is one that is a bit technically complex, but it when you mingle companies together, and I'm talking here about an HOA management company and lots of supposed nonprofits, and you get into financial difficulties in bankruptcy, the judge can say, look, you guys look like you're separate, but I'm gonna mingle you all up because you're, you know, if you've got people on both sides of the same bank account, you're all the same. So it raises the issue of, you know, if an HOA company went belly up, what would happen to all the cash that was sitting in the bank accounts that they managed? Would that get embroiled in the same bankruptcy? And I think there's a good shot that you would. But to get back to the bank accounts, there's another element which is important here, which is that what these management companies are doing in large part, and not every one of them, but they've got a standard practice of having what they call a master agreement, whereby the management company, and they're named as the customer on this documentation, not the homeowners, that they are the, in effect, customer, and the master agreement will allow them, with a given bank, such as U.S. Bank, which is one of the most amazing discoveries I think we've made, what they're doing with these master agreements is, in effect, the management company steps in and assumes the role of the customer, and the account documentation to manage the accounts is not signed by the individual boards or anybody representing them. It's signed by the management company with its authorized depository, authorized signers. And what the bank gets is a resolution, not of the individual homeowners associations to open the bank accounts, but a resolution in that master agreement that the management company will be administering and shuffling those accounts in and out. So they can, you know, in practice, they can come along with a new homeowners association, put them on the account, and there's no verification by the bank of where that money is actually coming from.
So they're so what you're saying basically is they're commingling all the funds from every association they manage. They're just throwing it all in one pot.
I think they are. We've got some more proving up to do, but here's the question I've been putting to them, and I've been putting to people that, you know, aren't necessarily au fait with banking matters. If you're a homeowners association and that money belongs to you, why can't you get from the bank what's called a read-only username and password so you can look at what's going on in that bank account? You can't transact because it's read-only. And so far, that they've refused to do that. They've come up with a number of reasons in different homeowners associations with different management companies, but certainly First Service figures in there. They're refusing to give you access to that. And as a banker, there's a simple conclusion I come to, and I think most people would come to, is if you can't get a read-only access to your bank account, why not?
Good question.
And the answer is that. So I've been telling people, if you want to ask one question, make one records request of your homeowners association, ask for a copy of the usernames and passwords to that bank account on a read-only basis and see what they say.
Interesting. That's really interesting. I did not know that you could do read-only access. But if you go to the association, a lot of people are having so much trouble getting financial information, and you have to have – you're on the hook for – paying back or covering all the costs and the expenses. But if you're not allowed to know what's going on, I mean, that's pretty terrible.
Well, and this is another thing that there's so many strands here, and I'm trying to keep them in an orderly fashion. You know, there's the $1 billion that was lost in Arizona, and those people that lost the money are working for some of these banks that are currently engaged in these current practices. But the financial information you absolutely need, and one of the reasons you need it is that all these associations are set up as not-for-profit corporations, but they're still corporations. But the unique feature, which I've never seen anywhere except years ago in a strange context, in effect, they're not limited liability companies, because those corporations can levy the members for assessments, which in effect makes the homeowners association supposed corporation much closer to a partnership. And I believe that what I've, you know, based on some very simple mechanics of the way the contracts, the management contracts are drawn, that the real structure that these companies are really using, and this would get tested only before a bankruptcy court, is that each homeowners association is really a general partnership where the general partner is the management company. When you think about that, and this gets back to Enron, I mean, this is one of the things that brought Enron down, wasn't the only thing, but, you know, what they were doing was they were setting up these partnerships that they substantially controlled when they were supposed to be arm's length, and then the debt that these partnerships incurred, which was very, very substantial, would not appear on their balance sheet. When it came to bankruptcy, the judge said, look, you know, you've got the same guy at Enron signing checks to fund the partnership as the treasurer of the partnership, who then deposits the monies. You've got the same insurers, you've got the same everything, and so all those partnerships were substantially consolidated by the judge in bankruptcy, because he said, this is a sham. I mean, the duck principle applies, that if it looks like a duck, talks like a duck, quacks like a duck, it's a duck. But that runs, here's where the dot connecting falls. From the people that design this structure, it gets into difficulties. Anytime, and this may sound a bit financially complicated, but anytime you've got a series of lots of different moving parts and you try and structure it, in this case, I believe the management companies wanted to get effective control of the deposits and certain banks wanted to allow that to happen. You set up the documentation structure with these master agreements. And the master agreements, they would say, well, the authority for the management of the bank accounts, you've got to look into the management agreement. And that's true. But we have a thing in banking called crack risk, and it's not the drug. It's the, as in, you know, fall between the cracks. When you put that structure together, you can fall foul of other very important principles, one of which is if those accounts are, in fact, commingled, and we've got a pretty good idea that U.S. Bank in Arizona alone with First Service has probably got somewhere between $50 and $75 million on deposit on behalf of its HOAs in Arizona with U.S. Bank. And if, as is described in the agreement, it's all an agency function, and I think that word was pulled somewhere because there's a strange interpretation of the Patriot Act you can use, which says that agents are okay, but I don't believe it is. Well, there's a huge difference between an agent acting on your behalf and a fiduciary acting on your behalf as far as the FDIC is concerned. And the whole question of what FDIC insurance does and does not do is a lot more complex than people imagine. But I do know that there's a difference in the FDIC's mind between an agent and a fiduciary. And a fiduciary would be an accountant holding monies in trust, an attorney holding monies in trust, you know, that kind of – but in all cases – or a money Schwab. But in all cases, those fiduciaries are licensed by somebody. And so here you have a situation where you've got these agents who – in most cases have trouble managing landscaping contracts. They're functioning as fiduciaries, and only the FDIC knows, and we will approach them at some point, does that $75 million that First Service keep with U.S. Bank, is that one deposit for the purposes of FDIC, or is it maybe 200? And to be honest, I don't want to see a legal opinion which I've already got from First Service responding from that. That doesn't count. Legal opinions in banking don't matter much. It's the fiduciary standards that you have to meet, and the prudential person standard, which overrides legal opinions. And then the real question is, what does the FDIC think? Do they think that they're issuing multiple amounts of insurance to that set of deposits, or is it just one? Because if it's one, and a major bank or one of these smaller banks goes belly up, we may be in for a bit of a surprise. But I want to emphasize we haven't proven that yet. I've got a high degree of suspicion that might be the case, but I don't want to come away making people think that they don't have FDIC insurance, because at the end of the day, the only people that can say that will be them.
One of the questions in my mind as I'm sitting here listening to you talk is, you have a management company that has that manages 20 associations, which is not unusual, and sometimes even more. And if they're putting everything under one account, one big bank, suppose they are fired by an HOA. How do you unravel and untangle all of that? Because the money should go back to the HOA. And if nobody has any idea, if they don't have a clue as to what's going on, how much money there is, if the board doesn't know what's going on because they're told, don't worry about it. We're the professionals. You just sit there and look pretty at the meetings and we'll handle it for you.
But they're not professional. They're not professional money managers. With respect, they are landscape contract managers. Basically,
I understand. But board.
That's the argument they use, of course. Yeah.
But you know, when they come in, the board thinks that you've got Harry homeowner who's just bought a house and he's full of himself and he thinks this is wonderful and he gets on the board. And he doesn't know a thing, but that's okay because the manager says, we'll help you. We're the professionals. We can come in and we can work with you and we can help you. We can tell you what needs to be done. And so Harry homeowner says, yeah, okay, I don't have to worry about a thing. I mean, how many times have you seen managers sort of manipulating board members, telling board members what to do because they've never had an original thought in their lives? They don't know what they're doing.
Well, we are going to test this because one of the three homeowners associations that we own in, one of which is the Basket Case up in Prescott, and then we live in a very good one, an excellent one, but there's still these mingling of cash issues going on with Mutual of Omaha, I believe. But in the case of the one that we rent and my wife is on the board, we had a board meeting that I attended about 4 or 5 weeks ago. And on the table was a request for certain bank information, signature cards, and also usernames and passwords for the treasurer, who's a board member. And I asked for the same information, and I also asked in writing for the copy, electronic access to the general ledger. They were given authority, first service, to give that information out. A board resolution was passed at a subsequent meeting by the board telling them that they had to accede to these requests. First Service's response was, particularly when they found out the board was going to move the money from U.S. Bank to a couple of others, and by the way, the deposit was in excess of the FDIC limit, they resigned.
Who resigned?
The management company.
Oh, the management company. Okay. Wow.
Yeah. Now, as I say, that particular association, and also a bigger one, we've filed two petitions where basically, the issues are the same. We want access to the books and records, and we want access to the bank accounts, and they're both of the associations are refusing. So what we've done in our petition, separate petitions, is we've said, well, you know, these are the records we're after, and so we've named, and the Department of Real Estate turned this around in 24 hours, which is remarkable. When it gets to the hearing, we have named, in one case, the chief financial officer of First Service Corporation in Toronto as a witness. We've named one of the banks. We've also named at U.S. Bank, and we've also named the regional manager for First Service that's based in Phoenix. And so it's going to be very interesting if we get to that stage. I mean, there's always a few procedural things that get in the way, but they'll be on the witness stand and they'll be questioned by me about how these banking matters work, and the same will happen with the other association.
Sounds interesting. And this is fascinating. This is the first time I've ever really thought about a lot of this stuff, so I really thank you for bringing this to our attention. I think that our listeners really need to know about this, need to understand, because they're on the hook. The other thing that seems to happen with these big mega management companies, and I think Bill Davis is one who's always talking about it, is the insurance, where they'll buy one policy for 3, 4, 10 management associations. Yeah,
that's correct. And in fact, with First Service, we were fortunate to get their own insurance policy out of them, which some other management companies have refused. They've said, you know, my insurance is none of your business. If the board wants to ask for it, we'll consider it. But in the case of First Service, we do have their own insurance policy. And, of course, their insurers will be and are getting copies of all the documentation in the knowledge that they're insured, and also U.S. Bank, are the prime and only witnesses in the hearing when it takes place, probably sometime in January.
Well, sounds fascinating.
But you see, that's another element of the puzzle. When you get to this issue, if it's called, and you can Google it, it's called substantive consolidation in bankruptcy. It actually comes out of some famous cases, but fundamentally what it says is if a management company and the association it's working with are not really managing, but in fact it's a ruse, and then the judge would look at all the signs of that and would say, well, you know, who's signing on the bank accounts? If it's only the management company, then it's really their money, not the association's. And then when they look at the management contract and they see things like, I mean, this is going to sound terribly technical, but in the management contract, you'll find a typical one-sided provision which says that the association insures and indemnifies the management company against almost anything.
Yeah.
It has to be gross, willful negligence. But the other way, it's not. And then when a bankruptcy judge would see the insurance, where the insurance for the corporation has got named people from the management company, I mean, to me, it's collapsible. And so one of the worst case scenarios, and I keep trying to say to people, I'm not a doom and gloom guy. I was brought up in banking to bring solutions, not problems. But the way you do that is you work out what the worst cases are, and then you make sure they don't happen. In this case, with First Service, it's $1.4 billion market capitalization. It's been on an acquisition binge, which I see is very similar to the way that the two big title companies in this country consolidated enormous power in the wake of the financial crisis. And, you know, you can see from their investor presentations, they're heading close to being the manager for almost 10% of every single household in subdivisions in the United States, which is, you know, probably 6 or 7 million people. And if the pattern that they're using repeats, then what happens if this company, which has a negative net worth, if you strip out the value of all the goodwill that it's amassed when it buys these management companies all around the country, and it had a financial accident, and there's $300 million of secured debt from some of the same banks that it's putting deposits with, where does that leave the homeowner?
Yeah.
Now, I'm sure somebody's going to say doom and gloom, and you're not, but, you know, frankly, this is the art of good business practice, and I've inquired of not just the chief financial officer of First Service, but also their what's called Sarbanes-Oxley directors, which are the independent directors that were put in place after the Enron debacle. And I've said to them and him, we've got five people in Arizona that are your employees, none of them bonded, none of them with banking training, none of them with any serious financial training that I can tell, and they have quasi-unlimited signing authority on probably $50 to $75 million of cash in the various accounts they manage. You as a company, you've got on your balance sheet $47 million of cash, but you're managing maybe $2 to $3 billion that doesn't appear on your balance sheet. The question I put to the CFO was, Jeremy Ruskin, was, would you allow the same liberal signing authorities where practically every single one of your 15,000 employees becomes a banker for the day on the corporate cash that you hold?
Good question.
And I can, having worked in a big bank with much larger sums of money on deposit than that, the signing authority control that a corporation, particularly a public corporation, has to have is subject to audit controls. It's subject to rigorous procedures which are required under Sarbanes-Oxley, but I don't believe any of those procedures are being observed by them when it comes to managing the monies that's supposedly not theirs, but, you know, is a much bigger amount of money.
John, there's so much information that you've given us. I'm sure that it's going to take me a month of Sundays to try and figure it all out, but...
This is why I get back to a simple question I think most people can understand. Ask your management company to give you access on a read-only basis to the bank accounts. And you can sit in your garden, you can do it anytime you like with Google on your iPhone, and you as a homeowner can see what's happening with the cash, because it's only when you get to the cash, the financial statements are fine, but it's only when you get to the cash that you see the charges that are taking place and find out what's really going on. Because everything ultimately has to reconcile the cash.
My question was, what do we do? How do we do it? And so you've basically answered that, is follow the cash, which gets back
to your listeners, I would just say, if you have, we have a our team, if you like, of people that came together in particular in the aftermath of the tragic death of one of our inspirators. We've got them in Arizona going out and asking that very simple question, and the responses coming back are fascinating. So I would just, without getting complicated, just ask your listeners, just try that with your management company and see what happens.
Read on. Yeah, that's really great. So all right. So you get access. Assuming you get access, what do you look for? Anything? What are the telltale signs? What are red flags?
Well, then you start getting into the once you've crossed that threshold, which we've done with one bank. I won't mention the name, but any bank should be able to do this. Then you've got to start looking into things like, is the bank observing the Patriot Act? And again, the Patriot Act is really, when it comes down to anti-money laundering, is very, very simple. It's based around the point of entry into the banking system. So the way you combat money laundering is you make sure that the person opening the account isn't a drug dealer. And there's certain things called customer identification procedures that you have to flow through. But it also fundamentally is consistent with what they call the know your client principle that any business person should understand. And if the bank has no idea who the ultimate board members of the homeowners associations are, and the boards themselves don't even know who they're banking with, how can the bank be compliant with the know your client principle?
Good question.
Now, the thing is, it's also important for board members to understand that the Patriot Act evokes all kinds of things, and it should actually, because, there's some disaster scenarios here, but the observance of the Patriot Act is not something that the board members, if they start ferreting around, need to worry about. The requirement to comply with the Patriot Act is on the bank, not the boards. So if they don't volunteer driver's licenses as part of this, which is a simple requirement for, if anybody's tried to open a bank account in the last couple of years, you'll find it's not that easy. It isn't the boards at fault, it's the banks. And we now know who those banks are. And there's about 6 or 7 of them, and I was very surprised to see US Bank as one of them. If the interest for the bank is, if you think about what a banker does, they make loans, obviously, but the fundamental role of a banker is to take deposits. And one of the biggest constraints on growth of earnings for a bank is, how do you grow your deposit base? I mean, that's why the investment banks on Wall Street were made to turn into banks, because it's only when you're a bank you get deposits. Well, the business of running a bank depends on how quickly and cheaply you can acquire those deposits. And the acquisition of those deposits is typically done two ways. One is you go out and buy another bank, which is expensive, and you've got all the merger problems that go with that. The other is just the hard slog business of opening bank accounts. But what these banks have discovered is they've got a much cheaper way to acquire the deposits. They find one management company with 200 deposits. They couldn't care less about who the ultimate depositor is. They just do with the management company. And bingo, you can grow your balance sheet like crazy. And that's what First National Bank of Arizona did in 2000. They put $1 billion in deposits on just by dealing with a small number of management companies.
Is the bank associated with CAI in any way? Because I know at one point that CAI started having its own banks, just like they had their own management companies and their own law firms and everything affiliated with them, not that their own. But there were banks that were just CAI affiliated, and they did specialize in HOA money.
Well, I don't know whether they're affiliated. I don't know whether they're affiliated or not, and there's ways of finding that out. But I can give you the names of some banks that are certainly CAI members. Some of them are active in the local market. Some of them are active on a national basis. The banks that are clearly active on a national basis are Mutual of Omaha, and then there's Western Alliance Bank, which operates on a national basis with individual banks in each state. And then there's U.S. Bank, which seems to have made a big priority of this. And the point I've been making to U.S. Bank is, and I've put this to their general counsel and also to Wells Fargo, is that in my view, and I assume people are aware of the big debacle that Wells Fargo went through recently, where they were opening up individual accounts for their existing clients, the only difference between what Wells Fargo did and what U.S. Bank is doing is that Wells Fargo at least weren't running foul of the Patriot Act because they knew who the clients were they were opening up dummy accounts for. But in the case of U.S. Bank, they're doing pretty much the same thing, but they don't know who the clients are.
That was going to be my next question. You've got Management Company A who manages 20 associations, and if they've got just the one account and they're throwing everything, commingling everything in there, how can you it sounds like it would take a tangled up mess. Have you ever had a ball of yarn that's all tangled up, or for those of us who wear chains who get their chains all tangled up, and it'll take a month of Sundays to go through and untangle them? And that sounds a little bit like trying to follow this piece of string or this piece of wool or whatever it is down to the pot where it ends, the ending. Is that?
Oh, it absolutely is, and that's where this substantive consolidation in bankruptcy comes in. I mean, I mentioned Enron. I can't mention the name of another corporation, but I can tell you that in the financial crisis in 1990, when I was at Citibank, we had a major corporation, which is a household name, that had engaged in a series of partnerships, and they were insolvent to the point where they drew $1 billion down from all their banks and put it in another bank to keep it as a war chest. But the reason we didn't put them into bankruptcy is not because we couldn't, but the mess that would have been created would have been a 10-year workout for the attorneys. But they only had about 50 of these partnerships in this case. Here's a situation where First Service is growing like crazy and acquiring all these companies, all of which are, you know, they're purchasing companies. They're not hard asset companies. It's all goodwill. And they've got... I forget how many individual homeowners association, but I think they advertise they've got they have 15,000 employees. We're talking
15,000
millions of people and maybe 100,000 homeowners association, and that company got into difficulty. Well, companies with just people as assets, which is what they are, when the company goes into difficulties, they disappear. How would those homeowners get access to their cash? How would they pay their bills?
They wouldn't. I mean, we see that we see, and I don't know how it's happening, whether it's embezzlement or whether it's just being along these lines, but we've heard of associations that have gone without water, without electricity, without maintenance, because they can't afford to pay for it, and yet the homeowners are paying in all the time.
Well, and, you know, again, I don't want to scare people, but...
We need to scare people because everybody is sort of all happy and comfortable and just floating around until something happens. And
well, think about what happened in 2008, in the fall of 2008. I mean, the financial professionals and some of us saw that coming years before. I mean, I was telling the Federal Reserve Board that these banks are FDIC-insured hedge funds, and I know that the Federal Reserve Board in San Francisco was saying Washington doesn't want to hear what we're telling them.
Washington never but does want general, to hear anything.
Yeah, and well, maybe with the new government we will, but it only hit the poor general public when, you know, First Reserve broke the buck and people start worrying about whether they're going to be able to pay their rent in the next week or so. And so that's the scenario here. If we can't get the regulators to really understand what's going on here, and we're not talking about new laws. The regulators I'm talking to, one of the first things they asked me, and one of the things that Senator Farnsworth asked was, he said, "Do we need new legislation to make this happen?" And I said, "No. You just need enforcement of the existing banking regulations, with or without Dodd-Frank."
So I'm going to switch because there's so much here that you've already given us. I think that's amazing stuff. But you are working with your legislators in Arizona, and you're also looking at having a lobbyist, from what I read.
Yes, we all kind of State Senator Farnsworth here, who's made some earlier attempts to get enabling legislation, didn't work the first time because the process, I think, started off with too much influence from the community managers and CAI, who, by the way, we're starting to see there's some real issues between those two organizations, one of which is for profit and one of which is not. We've been working with him with it was a very small snowball that started about 6 months ago when we all kind of somehow became aware of each other, and then the back channels and back messages from the blog, and we ended up starting about 4 months ago or 5 months ago on a monthly basis with the senator, with maybe 10 people in the room. That's now grown. It includes the realtors. The realtors, Arizona Association of Realtors, has decided to support some of the measures, which are fairly comprehensive, actually. We have 15 or 16 different legislative proposals around disclosure, proper disclosure on resale, bringing anti-SLAPP protections, constitutional protections, to protect homeowners from being sued by their boards. And that package has come together very nicely. We had a bit of a glitch because one of our inspirators, and if anybody's seen the blog and wonders who that gorgeous face on the blog is, that's Jill Schweitzer, who died tragically. But yeah, we've got this package pretty well nailed down now. We're starting to some of those legislative proposals have been dropped, as they call it, in the Senate with the Senate President, and we intend to make the next 3 to 6 months a very active period where we want to get their attention, and frankly, one of the ways I'm getting their attention is to just say, "Look, do you want to lose another $1 billion?" and make them react. And so far, it's going very well. I'd say the key, we were very pleased to find that the realtors came on board with the proposal to put disclosure with regards to the homeowners association on the same level as disclosure in the buying process as the house, rather than the disclosure, if it happens, turns, you know, pile of documents in escrow when the wife is at the closing, when the wife has already got the you know, the decorations fixed up. So treat disclosure for the HOA and put it on the same level as the home, and I think the realtors have figured out that's something they should support.
They should support it. Something I was in favor of years ago. I'm not sure. The thing is, when you buy a house, as you said, you've got the decorations. It's an emotional purchase, and people don't really pay a whole lot of attention to the mechanics of what an HOA really is. And I think if you're going to have something like that, but again, you're going to have options and choices, is that the realtor's got to sit down at the very first meeting with her clients and say, okay, I can show you what you're looking for, 3 bedrooms, 4 bedrooms, 5 bedrooms, whatever. If it's in an HOA, this is what an HOA is all about. And if you have the options, I mean, you explain to them exactly what they're getting into, because they're not just buying 4 walls and a door in an HOA. They're buying so much more. And they don't
recognize
it. Well,
they're also buying a potential liability. They're buying a potential liability.
Absolutely, yeah. Exactly. Absolutely, exactly. And they need to understand that places like where I live right now, the choices, that they're tearing down all the older buildings because they're not smart growth. They use too much land. And so they're putting in condos and co-ops and high-rises and just cheek to jowl and shoving people in left, right, and center. And, of course, what that does is with an HOA mandate, everything is under an HOA. The county just collects the taxes and does very little in return for that. So to go to a buyer and say, if you don't want an HOA, then you have to have something that's not HOA controlled to show them.
Well, but there you get into the problem, and this is where the rubber really meets the road, and you bump into the gorilla in the room,
right,
which we haven't fully addressed yet, which is the management companies are fiduciaries, in my view. They're money managers. They look like money managers. They act like money managers. They take decisions. As I say, the cash that, in effect, First Service has under management is multiples of its own cash, but that money management, unless they've got a centralized system they haven't exposed to anybody, is being managed by people that have no banking training whatsoever. And so the question comes up, what about licensing them? And we've in our proposals, we've identified HOA management and legislative changes to remind board members of their fiduciary responsibilities, but we haven't yet dealt with the question of licensing them. And part of that, and this is not just my decision, we've got a great group of people here, some remarkable people. The question I keep posing is, we've got a very supportive Department of Real Estate, really very supportive. We have a Commissioner of Real Estate who's very consumer oriented, and that I think is quite unique. But the real question is, what is a management company? Is it a property management? Should it be regulated as a bank? To me, they're shadow banks. And then the big hurdle is, even if you did that, how on earth would they turn around all those people that are don't have the skills to be able to do what bankers do?
So you're talking about banking. We do have licensing here. It was something that I fought against because I didn't think it would make a hell of a lot of difference. In fact, I thought the only reason, and CAI was definitely for it, the only reason was because it would increase membership for CAI, and that's exactly what it did. Because somebody had to train them, and somebody had to test them, and who was going to do that? Well, it was going to be, it doesn't have to be CAI, but CAI is mentioned in the statute, can be anybody, but who else is out there doing the training? And then CAI has something, if they credential you, then you have to be a member, otherwise you lose your credentials. And in order to get your license, in order to get your license, you have to have some kind of credentialing. So it, you know, you go around and around the mulberry bush. It ended up costing a whole lot more, and the net result was it increased membership for CAI. It increased, put more money in CAI's coffers. That's where a lot of that money comes from.
Well, I hate to leave this conversation.
We're not done yet.
I hate to leave this conversation. Yeah, but I did say that I was brought up to bring solutions. If I went into my boss and said, here's a problem, he'd say, well, go back and find the solution. And you could get fired for that. One of the things that I'm quite excited about is that as a result of the blog, both within Arizona and outside of Arizona quite recently, a number of people have emerged who have absolutely outstanding software and systems experience. One gentleman has done it all, and he's involved in a major case where he can't get the money out of First Service either in his homeowners association. I would like, and he got this, I would like to put him and some of the good bankers who are waking up to this and say, hey, there's an opportunity here to do two things. One is put some good banks together with some software that will come up with a very transparent system, which will be something that the individual homeowners association could use. And in so doing, you don't make it more expensive, you make it cheaper. Because from what I've seen of some of these software packages that are marketed by Association Voice and others that are behind these management companies, I don't have a lot of faith in the integrity of them.
Yeah.
And I don't see them working in the kind of fail-safe manner that would be if you put a good bank together with a good software company and you devised a new system. Because software systems age very quickly. And so that's because inevitably we'll get the question from certain quarters, why do you want to regulate something? We're not in the business of regulating. Well, I think even Donald Trump has said that, you know, for every two regulations we get rid of, we don't mind creating another one, but it's 2-1.
Yeah.
This is one of the ones, but we have to find an answer to the question. This just increases the cost of business. And I think that's the key to it. It's technology.
Yeah. No, I agree. You're absolutely correct. We've got a couple of minutes left, and you talk about your blog. I want you to give out the blog address, the URL, because you've got a lot of good stuff there. And you can sign up to get...
It's www.arizonahoa.blogspot.com. And it's not a blog so much as a compendium of evidence. There's nothing on there that isn't documented. So I have a lot of links into Google Drive with a whole filing system behind it. But what you can also do is at the bottom of the web page, if you don't want to have to keep going there, you can enter your email address and you'll receive the regular posts, which I do about once weekly. And the important point is that even I don't see that email address. That's kept completely confidential by Google. So if people want to do that, and I've been very surprised. I think we're almost up to 55,000 hits on the blog in a very short space of time, and it seems to be regular regardless of whether I'm posting anything. So I'm hoping the message is getting out there.
Well, it sounds like it is. It sounds like a lot of people have been following your blog, and it's always interesting to see what's happening. John, I know you're sitting there waiting to go into court. I wish we could talk about the case, but I think we are out of time. But I would like to ask you to come back sometime and fill us in. I'm especially interested in what you guys are going to be doing with legislation. And so starting in January, February, when the legislative agendas across the country start filling up, and we hear...
I should add, if I don't mind, just to clarify that, I was threatened with arrest by a HOA attorney last week, and I'm not kidding. I'm actually sitting outside the federal courthouse because one of my friends is engaged in what will prove to be a very important First Amendment case where she's fighting for her First Amendment rights. And so I hope in about 2 weeks when the jury comes in that there'll be a story to tell. But right now it's early days.
Well, you know, keep me posted because I like getting these stories out. I like finding out about them and getting them out. So good luck to your friend. I hope she wins. And thank you so much for joining us, John. Good luck.
Okay. My pleasure. I enjoyed it.
Okay, take care. Bye.
Okay, take care. Bye.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.